buzzer, McCord on its way. Oh my goodness!
They have to get it. No timeouts. They do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, two fired basketball coaches talking ball, solving all problems. We've got Kunzo Martin coming up a little bit later. We've also got Coach Huggins.
Oh, boy.
Team
Did you
play.
See what he was wearing the other day?
Oh, that was sport. That's something I could see you wearing.
Actually. Not a chance. Not a look. That looked like...
He looked like a penguin.
My man Huggins, I don't know if you watched Bozo Circus, but Ringmaster Ned used to wear that in Bozo Circus. So good for Huggy. He can pull it off.
Yeah, I mean, Huggy can pull it off. I'll tell you one thing. You know, Huggy's a pretty competitive guy. What do you think?
Yeah, oh, God.
I mean, he's a pretty competitive guy. So let me ask you this. If Huggy was playing a video game, not that he would play a video game, but back in the day, if he was playing a video game, maybe he's back in the day, he's playing Monopoly. I can't see Huggins playing Monopoly, but you know what I'm saying. And he lost. Do you think Huggy would punch the wall? And do you think the wall would break or Huggy's hand would break?
I've always thought this. Then this goes back to Catholic school, Seth. I had a friend, Daryl Collins. Daryl Collins punched the church wall. And I remember thinking to myself, like in sixth grade, how stupid are you? Like, it's a church. It's a wall. Like, punch the guy that beat you. You know, don't punch your teammate. I think a manager was involved. Punch him. Don't be punching a wall. I always thought punching a wall was really stupid. I punched a lot of things.
Should we tell people why we're talking about this then?
We probably should. Go ahead.
Yeah, because Joel Berry was playing video games with a teammate, I think it was Luke May, and lost and got so upset he punched a wall and broke his hand, and now he's going to miss 4 weeks of the season. So having said that, and we agree that maybe punching a wall, maybe a pillow would be a good thing, is not a good idea. What do you think that impact on Carolina is? I had a chance to visit with some of those guys at Media Day. You know, what's your gut feeling on Carolina with everything that's gone on, the academic stuff, they're still playing, but... Without Joel Berry, what's your feel?
I think that North Carolina can lose a lot of guys. I think that, you know, they've always had guys. The eighth guy is a McDonald's All-American, all that kind of stuff. But to me, Joel Berry was the guy. I mean, and I've always felt like this, Seth. I've always felt like the confidence factor of a guy after a monster run in the tournament the year before, you know, assuming he comes back to college, really goes up. And the confidence of your teammates really goes up. So I think I think of all the guys, you know, if you're talking about the elite of the elite teams in college basketball, I would say, let me ask you, wouldn't you put Joel Berry at the top five of guys that the elite of the elite can't lose in terms of competing at the highest level?
Yeah, he's the one player I think that may be more important than anyone else. Think about this. Carolina was plus 12 in rebound differential last year. So they lose that. They lose their front court.
Yeah, they lost that
Bradley.
They play
a bunch of freshmen in the front court. And now they lose the guy kind of that stirs the drink. I mean, the guy that makes everyone else better. That, you know, he had to score a little bit more this year. And with the Felton kid in the back, Jaleek Felton in the backcourt with him a little bit, he could play off the ball. He can defend. He can rack it. He made big shots in the NCAA tournament. He has a toughness about him. Yeah, I think, you know, for his team, he might be the most important player in the country because they've already lost their front court.
Right. I agree.
You know, so, I mean, you know, now I'll tell you one interesting thing about ACC Media Day. You know, I was there and there was nary a mention of Carolina's academic situation that was resolved last week. And here's my take on this. I'm going to give you one quick take, and we got to get to the other teams. But tell me if you agree. If Carolina is Carolina, not the athletic department, not the basketball program, the banner stays, they played the games, they won the games, everything, I have no problem with. But if I'm North Carolina, and I'm sitting at the ivory tower at the top of the hill or whatever, wherever they're president resides. You know what? I'm surprised they didn't say, you know what, with everything that's gone on, we obviously know there was some academic fraud. We know that it impacted whether we knew it or not, it impacted our basketball program. Should we put ourselves this year on probation and not play in the NCAA tournament?
Oh, come on. Come on. I think they should put the university on probation. I think the president should have some sack and say, look, this is unacceptable at an institution of higher learning.
How does that trickle down to athletics?
I don't know. What can they do?
Nothing.
The NCAA came in. They said that basically everybody got the same thing. You know, to me, this was never an issue of an extra benefit.
I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, it was an issue of, in my opinion, university incompetence and athletic department enabling. I mean, and I'm not even mad. Like, I had friends, and these are my friends, Seth, and you know me well enough. My friends are like, Dan, don't speak out on this. Don't take those classes away from us. We need those classes. I'm shocked. Like, university presidents, university faculty, they're also politically correct. They speak on everything that is a politically correct thing instead of taking care of their own yard. I mean, how embarrassing is it that really, when you read the transcript, North Carolina basically made itself into a junior college by saying, well, yeah, these are acceptable. Well, no, they're not. Not for anybody that knows anything about higher education. Those aren't acceptable.
I think it's almost a little bit insulting to a junior college, because here's my deal.
Right.
That was an institute. Like, I agree. It was an institutional issue,
yes,
more than an athletic department issue. The athletic department took advantage of the institutional issue. And, like, you know, I wouldn't want to say that a junior college has absolutely a fraudulent curriculum,
because
it wasn't a class. It was a fraudulent curriculum. So, like, you know, I don't want the Junior College Association coming after you, D squared. You got enough people.
You're right.
After you.
You're right. You're right.
We're trying to save you from that. One less group that's calling your house is a good thing. So, I mean, I that's one of those things. Now, I'm going to throw another one at you.
Yes.
David Padgett, I had a chance to sit with him, the new coach. By the way, he absolutely had a blast on our podcast. We set the standard for podcasts in terms of interaction, he thought. He said, Bud, that Dockage, he's insane. And I said, that's a valid point also.
I'll tell you what,
I'm blown away by the guy. I was blown away by how he carried himself, his poise. He's a son of a coach. His grandfather coached his dad. His sister was a coach. He knows who he is. He's not trying to be anyone else. And he blew me away in the time I spent with him.
He did the same thing when we played here, or when we had played him on our show. I thought his calmness, his maturity, his not taking himself so serious, because let's be honest, Seth, there are a lot of coaches out there take themselves pretty damn serious. I'm not sure that this is all going to work out for him being the head coach. I mean, who knows? But I'm glad he got this opportunity. I'm glad that you can listen to him. Let me ask you this. You can listen to him and feel good about a young guy getting an opportunity. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
100%. And, you know, like, he came back from overseas. He spent the year as a graduate assistant at Louisville. Then he went, IUPUI, and kind of he said, you know, I went there, and even though we win a ton of games, I realized that this is what I want to try to do. And, you know, he understands the situation that he's in. And I think he'll handle it. You know, who knows wins and losses. He's going to handle it in a very mature, poised and professional way. I was blown away. Then I got a chance to visit with your guy, Coach K. And interesting, you know, just talking to him about their team. You know, talking about how young they are. And, they're not sure they have that leader. He said Grayson leads by example, but he's trying to get Grayson to talk more. That's not his personality. And how big they are. Let me ask you, when was the last time you thought of Duke and you heard Mike talk about all their big guys and how big they are, and, you know, they don't have the shooters they have? Is that a red light for you when you think about Duke?
No, because I think that he figures it out. And you know what's going to happen, Seth? Somebody's going to be mad.
They'll rebound it.
They'll rebound it, but somebody's left out. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one thing to be big, then it's all of a sudden you get into a game and you realize, Seth, we can't score. You know, I mean, and let's be, you know, even more honest, college basketball has gone to what the NBA has. I think that this is one of K's, and I guess we say this all the time, I don't know, but I think this is an interesting year for him because they, don't you agree, do they decide who they recruit, right? I mean, they decide what kind
of team. They select more than recruit.
Yeah, so they selected big guys. So this is, like, I'm guessing, just guessing, that he didn't go into this without a plan. Because this is abnormal for where college basketball is headed, obviously where all of basketball is headed. What he is doing, it just isn't what we're seeing in college basketball. Would you agree or disagree with that?
I would agree. And here's my take. You know, I look at their roster, and obviously Grayson can make shots. And Gary Trent Jr. is a very good player, but he's a freshman, and he's going to have to learn where his shots are coming from. Trayvon Duval is a city guard. Now, they haven't had city guards.
No.
I mean, like, you know, he's a put it on the ground, break it down, you know, kind of
over dribble at times.
Put it on the floor. And then they got like Marquise Bolden. He's humongous. You know, Marvin Bagley is really talented. He's crazy talented. But where do you play him? He's not a three, but he could play three. He can shoot the shot. He can shoot the three, but I'm not sure that's where you want him. You know, and then Wendell Carter, to me, I saw him going into his senior year. He blew me away how good he was. I mean, absolutely blew me away. I mean, the makeup of a team, not the chemistry, because I think, you know, Coach K is great at developing chemistry. But the makeup of a team sometimes hinders its ability to be good. Now, they probably will be able to be a great offensive rebounding team. You know, they're not going to shoot it as well. I think of Duke, you know, playing a small guy at three, at four, you know, a three at four. Spreading out, high ball screens, one post players, shooting a ton of threes, coming out in transition. This team is going to be so different than that team.
Right. That's what's interesting about it for me. And again, to my point, I think he set that up. No? Like, he doesn't.
Marvin Bagley kind of fell into it.
Yes.
I think they fell into
it. Yes,
Bagley
I'll give you that. I will give you Marvin Bagley that it fell into Marvin Bagley. But in terms of how they're going to play with others, I've never been under the impression that Kay, at this point in his career, number one, has desperation in recruiting, or number two, doesn't have a plan.
I think he'll go back to one of his old plans because they have, back in the day, they've played with bigger guys.
And, yeah.
You know, who knows? I mean, I could see him running a lot of, like, Grover stuff, put those big guys in the blocks, let people curl and post them and step out, and who knows? So, I mean, that'll be interesting to watch. I'll tell you the other thing that'll be interesting to watch. Probably the biggest shock of the whole scandal thing. I had a chance to spend just a touch of time with Jim Larrañaga, and he looks like a beaten man. He admitted he's coach number three, whoever, you know, whatever that is. And, you know, coach number three, he says he did nothing wrong. He didn't say it to me, but I'm obviously reading the statements. But coach number three was involved in some type of conversation about getting a player. And getting a player in a way that, you know, obviously is not the way you're supposed to get players. And just looking at him, of all the guys that have been mentioned in this thing, would you think that Jim Larrañaga is the last guy you would have thought?
No. No. I'm not saying he was the first. No. And I know he's a friend of yours, and I don't want to besmirch that, but absolutely not. I followed him at Bowling Green. So, no, he would not be. He would not be the first. There were other guys that I would certainly put ahead of him. But I've said this all along. There isn't a group that I would say, he's the last guy. It just isn't.
That's why I asked you the question.
Right.
Coach,
if somebody said to me,
Tony Bennett,
that might be the last guy. Now, that that might be the last guy, but would it shock you? No. Here's what I see. You know, Jim Larrañaga has been a really good coach. Jim Larrañaga has made really good moves in his coaching career. What he did at George Mason was really unprecedented, really. I mean, you can go back to the 80 with Penn and all that. But you know what? When you all of a sudden, and you know this better than me, I mean, when you all of a sudden get in a position where now it's, hey, this is Miami, we're competing with, you know, the Heat. This is Miami. All of a sudden, here's LeBron at a game. This is Miami. All of a sudden, for the first time, somebody even knows there's a basketball team playing on a Tuesday night, and you're trying to elevate this thing. You got to make decisions. And sometimes, like I've always said, if the worst thing that you ever do in your life is pay a kid who needs money, $100,000 to go play college basketball, and you're sitting in front of, you know, Peter at the pearly gates, I don't know that that's going to be the worst thing in the world. So I just, nothing would surprise me. I feel bad that anybody's caught up in this. You said it, and I've softened my stance a bit on it. But no, not at all. I'm not surprised that anybody, particularly in a Big Five league, would get caught up. Not at all.
Well, and like you said, if you coached again, you'd cheat your ass off.
I have said that a little bit, but that's facetious. My problem is, hey, my mother and those freaking nuns did a number on me. Catholic guilt kicks my backside, Seth. So, well, maybe I would, because I tell you what, fired isn't bad. I don't mind fired.
If you last 3 years.
What's that?
If you last 3 years, it's a lot of money, right?
Yeah, I mean, fired is all right. You know, like the great Ron Felling, an assistant I worked with, always said, man, in college basketball, you get fired if you win enough, you get a better job. And I didn't win enough, but got a better job hanging with you. But no, I don't. Hey, look, do you think I've hung on your every word, not your every word, these words. I have hung on this. Now, all of a sudden, people think they have leaks from the investigation, FBI. The FBI. For 2 years, nobody had a leak. So I'm not listening to anybody in this, right? Right? I mean, we're not listening to anybody that has a scoop on it. You're just kind of sitting there waiting for a shoe to drop as opposed to listening to anybody, right?
Yeah. To me, those guys don't talk to anyone. I'll tell you, so-and-so. They haven't said a peep for 2.5 years. All of a sudden now, every guy in the world, every insider's got an insider in the Bureau of Investigation, the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And I got a source inside the Bureau. Now, we could beat this up for a long time, and we're gonna get a chance, because I know you were at Big Ten Media Day in New York City.
What I took away, Seth, was what great kids in the Big Ten. I had a chance to talk to a lot of them. And Miles Bridges, Tum Tum Naren did an unbelievable imitation of Izzo. But let's be honest. Everybody in the Big Ten understands a couple things. Number one, you got a chance with Michigan State to have a national championship team. You just do. I mean, you look at what they have, what's surrounding them. Obviously, there's some questions. Cassius Winston has to play. You know, Tum Tum Naren has to be a difference maker at point guard. But that was kind of the conversation. Can a team win a national championship? And the other thing is, there's some young coaches in the league, you know, that are going to have the opportunity to make their mark. You know, last year, Chris Collins did a great job. Can they come back? What's his name? Archie Miller at Indiana. He's going to have an opportunity. You know, people really like Richard Pitino's team. Richard Pitino really likes Richard Pitino's team. And I talked to their guy, Nate Mason, who was all Big Ten last year, and he likes their team. So far ahead, so much more comfortable. So I think this, Seth, I think that in the Big Ten, you're going to see from top to bottom a deep league. People are Seth, you've met my son, right? My son, mm-hmm. I swear to God, Seth, thinks Ohio State can make a run to the national championship. He's like, Dad, I'm telling you, man, our roster's every bit as good as what Michigan's was when we went to Sweet 16, won the Big Ten title. I'm like, get out of here, you know. So, but then when you think about it, Jay Sean Tate's been terrific. Kata Bates Diop coming back is as good all-around player as you're going to see in the Big Ten. Micah Potter, 6'10" kid, can shoot the ball. C.J. Jackson, really. I mean, so it's a loaded league, I believe, with a team in Michigan State that's beyond everybody else. I've got Michigan State winning national championship. I've got Izzo as the coach of the year, and I got Miles Bridges as the player of the year. And you know what? I feel that way. I do. I think they're that good.
I have those same three guys. And I'll tell you, the first thing you said about how impressed they were, I did a little XM radio for.
Yeah, you were there, right?
Media day, yeah. And the players that I met were so well-spoken and had a clear vision of what they were doing, how their team, what their teams were all about. They, you know, they said all the right things, but it was genuine. I was blown away by the character of the league. And the one thing I realized is the league has found the ability to stay old. Like where you see other leagues that have not had the ability to stay old, like you go through the Big Ten, Northwestern, They've stayed old. You know, I mean, you know, you go right Iowa, they're sophomores now, but they're an older team. Maryland, you know, Mello leaves, but they got, you know, Cowan, Herter, and Wiley, and Checo. I mean, they've stayed old. And, you know, Michigan has stayed old. And I think the maturity of the league, not Wiley, I meant Checo for Maryland, but the maturity of the league is a bit impressive. I mean, Minnesota, you got, you know, Mason and, you know, Lynch.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, so I think that's the thing that, to me, was very, very impressive. And
Seth, let me give you two
Vince
guys.
Edwards blew me away.
Vince Edwards, incredible kid. Edwards
blew me away.
And Isaac Haas. I asked Isaac Haas, like, you talk about self-aware, Seth? You know, I did this rapid fire, ask stupid questions.
Oh, fast break. You did the fast break with B squared.
So I asked Isaac Haas, who plays your new movie? You know what he said? Drago.
Ivan Drago.
Right. Everybody knows it's Drago, but sometimes kids aren't self-aware. Seth, I'm going to give you two names. I already gave you one to surprise this year, so you're going to sound smart on TV. All right? Kata Bates-Diop is one. The other one is watch out Tyler Cook. I think Tyler Cook.
Oh, I love Tyler Cook.
Do you?
Oh, I love Tyler Cook.
Yeah,
he didn't get hurt last year. They're probably going to the NCAA tournament.
I agree. I think Tyler Cook is going to lead, if not lead the league in rebounding, because Murphy and Lynch and all those guys are monsters on the glass. But I'm telling you, Tyler Cook, do not be surprised if Iowa's Tyler Cook isn't all of a sudden, you know, at your desk there. These, you know, Billis and Reese and Jay Williams are talking about Tyler Cook. Tyler Cook, he's going to have a hell of a year for Iowa. I believe that. I do. I totally.
No, I agree. I think the one interesting team, and then we'll wrap it up, that really kind of, I don't know, like Wisconsin's culture is so good, all right? And obviously, Happ is so unique in terms of who he is. And I think he understands, like, a lot of guys at this stage would say, well, I got to show people I can shoot it. He'd like to make a shot or two. Maybe a free throw would be nice. But he understands, look, I'm a high post baseline player. You know, I'm going to get to the foul line. But that Wisconsin team, you look at the roster, there's so many question marks. Is the culture going to be able to be strong enough to take, you know, the Iversons and the guys that now, you know, Thompsons and Trice, whose roles are changing? Is the culture and tradition going to be strong enough to keep them in the hunt for the NCAA tournament?
Seth,
that's a question for you.
Seth, that is so true. I go back, I don't know if you remember a kid named Jordan Taylor, terrific point guard.
Yeah.
Made every play down the stretch.
Jordan Taylor made a shot in the ACC Big Ten Challenge to beat me. Don't even get started.
All right, my bad.
You're killing me.
Well, he's leaving, and all of a sudden people are like, they're going to go down, Taylor's left, and here comes, you know, Koenig or whoever. Gosser comes in. You are so right. This is going to be interesting with Iverson, Thompson. You said that. Trice. This is going to be so interesting. Can they go from bit players to primetime players? Because Kaminsky was good as a sophomore, got hurt. Next thing you know, he's the player of the year in the country. So that's the culture that they've had, and this is going to be so interesting to me with Wisconsin. Can they put themselves, because it's a good league, it's a deep league, and as you said, it's an old league.
We'll be back in a minute with Missouri head coach Kunzo Martin. We're joined by Missouri head coach Kunzo Martin. And coach, first of all, been a crazy probably last 5 months for you, obviously moving back across the country, getting back to your home, basically. What has it been like to come home and be the head coach at University of Missouri for you?
Oh, it's been great. I mean, I think every stop I've had, I've learned a lot. In those transitions, I've grown as a coach. Of course, you gain wisdom over time, but it's great to be home, I guess, even though I'm from St. Louis, grew up in East St. Louis, Illinois. So it's certainly an honor to be at home.
You know, you took advantage of the NCAA giving a little leniency, per se, and allowing these exhibition games to help hurricane relief, which is phenomenal. What you guys were able to do in such a short period of time, almost $2 million raised, and was incredible. But you also had a basketball game, and you know, that's obviously been a great rivalry through the years. But with such a young team, what did you learn about your team in that experience, on that stage? You know, obviously, it's a learning experience for them to understand we're doing something good, but you also want to learn about your team moving forward. What'd you learn about your squad and to help you move forward as the season begins?
Well, the thing we talk to our guys about, we have an opportunity to raise money for hurricane relief. You're talking about with pay-per-view over $2+ million. So great for both programs, not only for the programs, but for the country to be able to do some of that magnitude. But like we said to our guys, we're playing a basketball game. So once the ball is tipped, somebody has to win the game. And I thought both teams competed. Kansas is a talented program. I thought Graham played as well as any guard I've seen in a long time. He shot the ball, had tremendous poise. Udoka did a great job around the rim. So they played well. They executed. We knew they'd be a good team. They played well on both sides of the ball. There was a lot of things we learned from that game. I thought we made tremendous strides and had a long ways to go. Because I think oftentimes as a coach, you like to feel where you are. You beat up each other in practice for a course of time. And then to play a game of that magnitude on that stage and that atmosphere, 3 weeks before you play a real game was great for our program and our guys.
You know, a lot is excitement around the Missouri program since you've arrived, obviously, and you know, a lot of pressure in a lot of ways, not on you, but, you know, I think about, you know, Michael Porter and the hype and, you know, the expectation. You've coached guys like that before. I mean, you've had Jaylen Brown, and you've had Ivan Rabb. You know, you've been in this environment. How much of those past experience helped you in dealing with, you know, your young, talented group, and especially Michael, who obviously is a little bit under that microscope. And, you know, like the last guy probably has been under a similar microscope was Ben Simmons. And, you know, have you looked and seen how they've handled that situation and how you guys are handling it and how can help him deal with it and just enjoy this experience?
Well, I always try to enjoy it. I know that's oftentimes easier said than done, but I've been grateful for every stop that I've had, and I thank God for those stops. And I think the lesson, when I got out to Cal Berkeley, to have an opportunity to coach Ivan Rabb and Jaylen Brown and two tremendous young guys, and they were, you know, 19 years old as true freshmen, but their families did a tremendous job in their growth as people, very intelligent. You know, Jaylen Brown, he fought to take two grad-level courses as a true freshman. Ivan Rabb, very intelligent. So I learned a lot from those two guys and just how to approach, you know, guys of this magnitude. Not that any other guy is different, but it is a little bit different. So just learning how to deal with those guys, how they move in practice, how you coach them. Because you coach hard, you teach how you teach. But everybody's different. Everybody learns differently. So I just think in those lessons with those two guys, it taught me a lot. So it just goes to show, and I continue to pray for wisdom, guidance and humility as I coach, and I think with those two guys I gained wisdom. So now all of a sudden you're blessed to have an opportunity to coach a caliber kid in Michael Porter Jr. So in those lessons I learned from, you know, Ivan Rabb and Jaylen Brown, okay, and you take notes and okay, this worked, this didn't work, let's try this approach. And it's just part of it. It's an everyday process. And I think the unique thing with this is Michael Porter Jr.'s dad is on the staff. So now all of a sudden I've never had that experience of coaching with the kid's dad on the staff. So it's a different dynamic. Sure. And it's one day at a time. And I think it's a great thing because, you're gaining wisdom over time. And I'm blessed to have the opportunity to do it.
You know, you were interesting when the first start of that FBI investigation came out in the press conference. And you had a great quote. I think someone asked you something about the investigation of how you're going to handle it within your program. And you basically said, I don't need to deal with compliance because I am compliance. I'm going to set the standard of how we're going to conduct our business and how we conduct run our program. And, you know, kind of elaborate on that, because let's face it, I mean, that situation is hanging over college basketball. I mean, I speak all over the country, and that's the first thing people want to talk about. How have you handled that, and kind of elaborate on your take and what you tried to express in that situation?
Well, the thing for me, and then when they asked me that question, when I said I am compliant, and what I meant by that, I was joking, and I was serious, and what I meant by that is,
sure,
there's the only player that I didn't really know as well in recruiting since I've been doing this as a head coach was Michael Porter Jr., which I knew him from afar. I knew who he was as a player. I hired his dad on the staff, so we're working toward building a great relationship. But everybody I've recruited since I've been a head coach, I've been a major part of the recruiting process. So it wasn't a case of an assistant coach recruit a guy and say, okay, coach, he's in our program. I've always been a part of every recruit. So anything that comes to our program, not that I see everything. Now, we can't see everything, but I make sure that I'm a part of it, and anything goes on, I'm accountable for it. And which, as Aziz said and done, it's a tough thing to ask yourself as a head coach because you don't see everything, but it's a part of my job to help our players understand we have to do right. We can't afford to make those type of mistakes. The only issues we'll have, and I tell our players all the time, we have our struggles on the court, we can bounce back from that. We have our struggles in the classroom, we can learn and grow from that. But we can't do anything outside of the effective program. And like I tell our staff, this is how we eat. Guys, we're okay with losing games. We can bounce back from losses. But we cannot bounce back from anything else. And the one thing I've tried to take a tremendous amount of pride in is just having character, integrity, and being honest in this profession. And I can do that because all of a sudden, if it doesn't work out for me in any program, I will know when I go to sleep at night, I did everything in my power to run the program the right way with a high level of integrity, which, again, is one day at a time. I'm far from perfect, but I try to do everything in my power to do it right. And I continue to pray to God to give me balance and understanding and wisdom and also give me insight and foresight for anything that is coming ahead.
Let's talk about that. You are one of the guys that came out and said, you are one of the guys that took accountability. Does it frustrate you at all when you hear so many guys say, oh, I'm shocked. Oh, you know, put a spin on things instead of an accountability on things?
Well, I don't know if it necessarily frustrates me because, again, I was under Gene Katie. I had the pleasure of coaching with, you know, Matt Painter, who does a tremendous job with his program. So, I mean, that's just who I am. That's where I come from. And I got this thing for me, because oftentimes there's a stigma sometimes of where you come from and who you are. Me being from East St. Louis, which is a wonderful place, the best place I've ever been in my life. So I take a tremendous amount of pride and represent East St. Louis first and foremost, regardless of wherever I'm coaching that. So that means I have to do it right because so many people are looking at me to do right. So, is it frustrating? I just think oftentimes everybody gets so consumed with what they're doing in their programs, but I think everybody knows who is who in our profession. I mean, I think with any sport, any profession, everybody knows who's doing what and who's who.
Konza Martin joins us talking about your team. Everybody focuses on Michael Porter, obviously. Everybody focuses on that. What are you focusing on?
Our team. What we try to do is every day play like it's your last day and try to have fun in this process. And what we tell Mike is he's a talented player. I just say, Mike, be 19 and go out there and have fun because I can only imagine, and I was blessed to play with Alfonso Ellis, who was the fourth pick in the draft, but he spent 4 years in college. I was blessed to play with Glenn Robson, who was the first pick in the draft, who spent 3 years in college. And those are very talented guys. They worked extremely hard. But they didn't have the dynamic of the social media to deal with every day. So everything you do is magnified at a high level. So I can only imagine what he goes through. So what I always tell him, when you come into the facility, Mizzou Arena, you can let your hair down, so to speak. Be whatever it is you want to be. Compete, play hard in practice, make mistakes, take your lumps, learn from it, go through it. So now when you get out here in this program, whenever that is, you have the tools necessary for survival when you get out in that real world. Because it's not just about basketball. He'll get what he needs to get out of that. But I think it's more the life skills. But we just talked to our team about trying to have fun and work as hard as you can work. Have courage in doing whatever it is you're doing to the best of your ability. Try to max out in the classroom, not just to get a grade, but to max out and be successful in the classroom. And try to have a level of integrity and honesty to you as a young guy. And that's not an easy thing to do when you're 18, 19, 20 years old. But try to have a level of honesty and integrity to you. So the ballpark we deal with, that we talk a lot of life skills because I think those things are prevalent nowadays.
Yeah, man, that's great advice because I think, you know, you talk about the guys you played with and then the guys that you played with and the great teams that you had a chance to coach. And, you know, all those teams had maturity. All those teams had life's experiences. All those teams had a different expectation. The kids today, everything's fast forward, whether it's a faster phone or, you know, you're watching music, you're not listening to music. I mean, the world has changed. And you know, a lot of kids, they don't take time to really take a step back and say, let me enjoy this experience. And, you know, one of the guys who's going to enjoy the experience is, you know, what is it, Jeremiah Tillman, the big kid. Everyone I've talked to who's seen you guys practice or play, so they've been blown away by his energy, his passion, his work ethic. Has he been a little bit of a surprise to you?
Well, I think he's only been a surprise because he got injured in high school. And not many people, for whatever reason, go see games in East St. Louis. I don't know why, because it's a great place. They need to go visit there. But so they didn't see him play much in East St. Louis, but he's a talented basketball player. He plays with a level of energy and passion. And I don't think I've seen him where there's been a day where he hadn't had passion or he wasn't given to his teammates with energy, excitement, enthusiasm, spreading the floor. I've never been around a big that runs the floor the way he runs the floor. He competes at a high level, doesn't make excuses. He makes his – take it a step further. He makes his assignments every day, his tutor assignments, be on class every day, try to work as hard as he can work. And those things, man, you can't take for granted because it just kind of identifies you as an individual, as a person. And I think he has the discipline to be successful in life. And, again, he has ways to go. But, man, it's a true joy to coach him. And what I try to tell him, just control what you can control. Don't get consumed with what goes on outside of this umbrella. Control what you can control and be the best you can be. And he's put forth an effort every day.
I'm excited to watch your team develop. And we appreciate you taking some time with us.
Thank you.
Great stuff.
Wish it was a little bit more time. But now we get a chance to welcome in the kinder, gentler, tuxedo-driven head coach of the West Virginia Mountaineers, Coach Bob Huggins, who is maybe the most nattily attired coach once again at Big 12 Media Day. Coach Huggs, how's life?
No, there's no doubt about it, Seth. There wasn't a maybe.
Coach, can I just ask you? You had the gold tux on. What came in second for you to wear?
All I had on was the vest.
Yeah. Well, all right. You're looking at your wardrobe. You say, all right, I'm going with the vest. What about the shoes? What would you have wore without, if not that?
What I'd want to wear was a pullover.
That's what I figured.
But. I thought, everybody else comes in a coat and tie and everything, so I don't know.
Well, you've been known to wear a tuxedo to back in the day to the Conference USA media days, isn't that true?
Now listen, both of you two have been to those things. If you don't entertain yourself,
right.
They are awfully,
right.
Awfully boring.
Right. Somebody asked me one time, who are you going to entertain? I said, myself. So, honest to God, you're so right. Those things will make you blow your head off. Yeah. Oh, man.
Wait a second. Hey, you went to
hey,
the.
Seth, hey, you hey, said this I was coming from a guy. Quanto, and then you put me on with Frank. What's that about?
hey, what's wrong? Dockage had to do his stand up interviews at the Big Ten Media Day, and he goes, it's the worst day of my life.
It's the worst. Even as a broadcaster, it's the worst day that there is. It's the worst. Whatever. Hey, Coach, couple of things. You know, you aren't the easiest guy to please. You and that's what's made you who you are. You're a demanding guy. What is your thought on this year's team? Where are you at with this year's team?
You know, Dan, honestly, I don't know. Dexter Miles was out, I think it was 16 of the first 17 practices. Got a real deep thigh bruise the first day. Beetle Bolden's been out like a week with a bad ankle. And it's bad, too. It's not one of those ones where some guy wants to get out of practice. And you know, then, of course, we don't have Easter for the first 16 games. So, yeah, honestly, I don't know. I mean, I like our sophomore class. I think they're going to be good. I don't know when that's going to be, though. Thank God.
Yeah, and you've got to replace guys, right, Coach? You've got to replace guys. I'm like I think the most underappreciated guy that people don't realize was so good for you guys. I mean, like, Nate Adrian did so many things, in my opinion, to help you win. Like, in your press, how do you replace a guy like Nate Adrian who's so good on the ball?
I don't know if you can. There's so many things up in the air. You know, I don't know what we do about the guy who takes Nate's place because Nate was able to sit down and guard point guards. I want to see, you know, the officiating thing, where it's going. The trap thing concerns me. I mean, I don't know how you tell whether, you know, supposedly if they take a step that rearranges the whatever that thing is, cylinder. And, you know, I don't understand that, quite frankly. I don't understand. I understand the intent. The intent is to let a guy be able to move the ball in the trap. I understand all that. But then when you take a step and it changes the cylinder, what does that do? I don't understand. So we'll have to see how that goes.
Will you ever not go back? Will you go back to not trapping, or are you just, you know what, this, I like it, it's fun, this is what I'm going to do, I don't give a damn, we're just going to do it. Will you ever go the other way?
I don't know. That's, you know, I'm in my mind, I'm struggling with those things on a daily basis. You know, you guys both know me. I mean, we work really hard on doing things the right way, because I think, you know, if you don't, it comes to bite you at the end, you know, when you least expect it. So, you know, I'm not sure. I'd like to keep doing it. I think it's fun to watch. I think it's fun to coach. I think it's fun to play that way. But I don't know. Some guys don't like it because you don't have as much control, because the game's going up and down so much. But I like it. I'll give you a great stat, Dan. I think I gave Seth this already. In the Gonzaga game, the Sweet 16, they attempted 40 shots for the game. We missed 40 shots.
Mm-hmm.
And still at the end, we, you know, if we make a free throw, if, you know, a couple things happen, we still win the game, missing as many shots as they took.
Let me ask you this, because you're an old school guy. I mean, you've been doing this a long time. You're not, you know, 28 years old.
I am at heart, Dan. I am at heart.
We all are. There's no question. Coach, but do you get into sabermetrics? Do you get into the analytics? Is that what kind of turns you, or is it as simple as, hey, look, we're going to get more shots than them, I want to press?
Well, I mean, don't we always try to get more shots? I mean, our game is a numbers game. I mean, no matter how you look at it, I mean, we all want a two-on-one. It's like Kevin Mack told me, you know, when we first started pressing, he said, you know, he said, the press is pretty good. He said, the transition, though, he said, you know, three-on-two, you know, you don't score as much as you should. Two-on-one, you know, you still, if you could get one-on-oh, you're pretty good then, one-on-oh. And that's what we're trying to do. We're just trying to create numbers. I mean, why do we ball screen to create numbers? I mean, everything's about creating numbers. So to say that numbers aren't a part of our game, they've always been a part of our game.
Do you pay attention, you know, to all the efficiency ratings and all that kind of stuff?
No.
I didn't think so. I just, you know.
You can see it because you don't, Hugs, let's face it. I mean, I analytic people, you know, they need numbers to quantify what they think. You've watched this enough where, look, you know if you're offensive rebound or not. You don't need to see if you're offensive rebound or not. You know if you're turning people over or people throwing over the top and attacking in it. I mean, in your mind, you see it, right? I mean, it just, you don't need to look at that to realize it's successful or unsuccessful, right?
Well, I mean, I think I know after all these years what it takes to be a good offensive rebounding team, and I certainly know when we're not doing what I ask them to do, which is, I guess that's a yes. Yeah, it's that deal, you know, they give you like, you know, so-and-so was like plus, you know, 26. Well, look who he was in with. And then with who Javon Carter was in with a couple times and see what happens. You know, that all that stuff is so subject to the personnel and personnel pairings as it is anything else.
Do you like your personnel?
I like Javon Carter a lot.
Yeah.
A lot. I think we're all right. I mean, we get Issa back after 16 games, we're pretty good.
Now, I'll tell you, the one guy that really impressed me is Konate Sags. I mean, like, he improved more to me, and I got a chance to see you guys play a bunch last year. more than almost any guy I've seen from this last year to this year that I've seen all preseason. Has he continued to kind of play at that level?
He's made plays at the rim, Seth, that we haven't had anybody make since Kenyon Martin, I think. And I'm not saying he's Kenyon Martin by any stretch, but he makes some plays that are, you know, you just like look at it like, wow, he's a talented guy. And he's getting better. I tell you what, he's making shots. I mean, as long as he gets his feet set, he's making shots. He's worked really, really hard. But most of our guys have. I mean, most of our guys have taken full use of the practice facility.
Hugs, what's your take on all this FBI stuff? I mean, what's when you saw this thing happen, what was the first thing that went through your mind?
Well, here's what I said. There's what, 356 Division I schools, something like that. Take that times four. That's how many of us there are. And to this point, four guys have gotten in trouble. That's pretty successful in most lines of work. You know, this thing, the college basketball is in trouble. It's out of control. It's not. I mean, do we have some people who don't do things the right way? Absolutely. So does every other business in this world. When there's money involved, people are going to do things they shouldn't do. And I said in a press conference, I don't have an ethical or a moral problem, you know, with taking care of a kid or their parents. I just can't do it because of the way I coach. And when you're as hard on them as I am, you can't walk in there every day with somebody holding something over your head. And you know, so I've never done it, and never will do it, because I can't coach the way I feel like people ought to be coached. But to think that our college basketball is bad or in trouble, it's not. You know, you hear it's kind of like you hear, well, the NBA numbers are up and the college basketball numbers are down. You know, we got to do more like the NBA. The NBA never pits one game against another. We have six games on sometimes at once. Of course our numbers are going to be down. Not our total numbers of people watching, but our numbers for particular games are going to be down. Of course they are. Because we compete against each other for television ratings. The NBA is smart enough not to do that.
You know why it's good to have Hugs on? Because you get common sense wisdom. You know, he's almost like, Hugs, we appreciate you coming on, because it's almost like having Aristotle come on, especially.
It's unmitigated.
Done
truth.
With you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Hugs, I look forward to seeing you in Germany.
They've got some really neat things going on at the base, you know, with the with our military. So it ought to be a great time and very worthwhile.
Look forward to it.
Thanks, Hugs.
Appreciate
Thanks,
it, man.
Sir.
All right, guys.
We really appreciate Coach Hugs and Coach Martin spending a little time with the two fired coaches, solving all the world's problems. And you know what? We'll be back next week with more insight into the coming season. And you know what? You really should go and subscribe. So, Gabe, how do people listen to us?
You can subscribe in the Listen tab of the ESPN app or Apple Podcast or wherever you get your podcast. That's where we are.
We hope you take the time to subscribe to the podcast so you can get those alerts, so you can get them on time, or as Jeff Van Gundy would say, on time, on target, to the best in college basketball. And we look forward to talking to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the NBA Lockdown Podcast, available in the ESPN app. Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage.